You're listening to Malice After Midnight. The following podcast contains subject matter that may be disturbing to some listeners. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts and not of the sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. And now, Malice After Midnight with Tina, Steve, and Christine.
Hello, hello.
Hey. Hello.
On today's episode, we're going to be talking about Joseph or Yosef, however you want to pronounce it.
Mengele. Yosef.
Well, that's how it's pronounced. It's like Yosef Mengele. He's a pretty bad dude.
He's a trash bag.
Yeah. Well, in this episode, I'm going to do a little bit of history. I'm not going to get real deep in some stuff because, I mean, if I start getting real deep into Auschwitz and the Nazi party and all that stuff, it's going to be like we couldn't fit into an episode. So yeah. I'm kind of just doing a brief warm up on everybody's history on some of this stuff, but you should have learned some of this in school, but I bet most of you didn't. So Joseph Mengele was one of the most infamous members of the Nazi party. He's right up there with Adolf Hitler, Heinrich Himmler, and Adolf Eichmann. Joseph Mengele is known as the Angel of Death of Auschwitz, and Auschwitz was a concentration camp in German-occupied Poland during World War II. And Auschwitz was one of the main tools the Nazis used to perform their final solution, which also is called the final solution of the Jewish question.
What's that?
Well, it was codename for murder of all the Jews on European continent. Okay. So, you know, that's the final solution to the Jewish problem was genocide.
Yeah.
So, like I said, bad people. Jews and gypsies from all over Europe were put into cattle wagons and train cars without windows or toilets or even seats and transported to Auschwitz. When the people arrived at Auschwitz, they were sorted into two groups, those that could work and those that were to be killed immediately. Hmm. The ones who were to be killed immediately were told to strip naked and sent to the showers for delousing, which were actually chambers that were used to gas the people to death. They, you know, the gas chambers, everybody's heard of that, you know. So they think they're going in for a shower.
Pictures of it on the internet.
You had to get deloused and they were gassed.
Well, yeah, and they had no idea, right?
No,
I mean, they're arriving.
Not at first. I imagine after time.
Fully clothed with hats and coats and luggage and everything.
Yeah, I imagine after a couple of years, there probably was more of an idea what was going on. But especially the first people going to these concentration camps, they had no idea. And this is terrible. It took about 20 minutes to die in the gas chamber. Mm. So you're in there suffering.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Because that's not just, I mean, that's a lot of
20 minutes,
seeing somebody, a lot of other people
watching
die
people
first.
Die. Yeah, I can imagine.
That's horrible.
This is crazy here. Above the gated entrance to Auschwitz are the words, "Abiet macht frei," which translates to "work sets you free." Yeah, which is
nice.
Ironic, or I don't even, ironic is the word, but cynical, because nothing was going to set them free. So this brings us to Joseph Mengele, which in my opinion is, if he's not the most prolific serial killer of all time, he's one of them. And he's responsible for the deaths of thousands and thousands of people.
That's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is he technically considered a serial killer, though?
Well, I'm considering him a serial killer.
Well, I mean, you know what I'm saying. Like,
well, we'll
I
get
mean,
into it. I mean, yeah.
I get what you're saying, and I agree.
He did it under the guise of medical experiments.
Right,
and
right.
He also just put people to death immediately when they arrived. So, I mean, I would say he's a serial killer.
I
think it's worth having him on
because,
the show.
Oh, yeah. You know, being that type of person that he was always, apparently, because, you know, he just was able to work freely and be,
right.
You know.
Well, he got the moniker of Angel of Death because of his cruel and cold demeanor during selection duty, which he performed more than all the other officers. And selection duty is when they would arrive, and they called it the ramp when they would get there, and he'd be standing there, and he would be deciding people's fate. So, and a lot of times it would be, he would just be like, he'd look at somebody and be like, thumb to the left or thumb to the right, and left you would live, and right was death.
Just by looking at him, he would do
just
that.
But yeah, he would ask people questions. He'd be like, see like a strong man and think, well, he can probably work, so he'll go to the left. And then if he saw an old person, it was just automatically, no question, just boom, right to the right. He'd see women, if they were pregnant, straight to death, just everything.
That's just horrible.
Yeah. Joseph Mengele was born on March 16th, 1911, in Günzburg, Germany. He was born to a wealthy family that manufactured farming equipment. And I know up until like the 1980s, you could still buy farm equipment with the name Mengele on it, which is crazy to me because that'd be like saying, like, I'm buying Hitler tractors or, you know what I mean? Because I mean, he's, as far as like, especially to people in that era that remember the World War II and then the following war crimes trials and stuff, Mengele is a name that many know. Maybe not so much now because people just aren't educated like they used to be.
Well, people get triggered.
Like, everybody's going to know the name Adolf Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
But I bet a lot of people don't remember, like, Eichmann or Himmler, and they're all, you know, they were big parts in the whole thing.
I don't know Eichmann. Himmler, I've heard that before.
In 1935, Mengele earned a PhD in physical anthropology and a doctoral degree in genetic medicine from the University of Munich. Mengele joined the Nazi Party in 1937 and joined the SS Party in 1938. One thing I don't have written down here, but I'm going to say, like, SS, like, if you were going to be in the SS, you had to, they had to trace your bloodline to pretty much be, like, pure German bloodline, no, nothing else. So the SS was kind of like the elite of the Nazis, you know, the more pure bloods and, you know. Mm-hmm. He was drafted into the war in June 1940, where he volunteered for medical services of the Waffen-SS. Mengele was wounded during the war and returned to Germany in January 1943. He began to work at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, Human Genetics, and Eugenics. He was promoted to the rank of SS captain and transferred to Auschwitz May 30th, 1943. When Mengele got to Auschwitz, that's where he really kind of came into his own. And I know you remember me saying just a little bit ago about him being called the Angel of Death because of the ramp and, you know, putting people to death and all that stuff. One of the things I thought was kind of interesting, you know, a lot of these officers, they all knew what they were doing, and they were definitely followers of the Nazi way, and they subscribed to it and they believed in it and did all these horrible things. And it's hard to even like give anybody a pass, especially the concentration camps, for like saying they were just following orders. You know, now I understand like soldiers on the front that were just fighting that never saw any of this stuff. You know, they're fighting for their country, but it's pretty tough to give anybody any kind of a pass. But one thing I thought was interesting is many of the officers that had the selection duty, they couldn't do it sober. Like they were like,
I bet
they'd be drunk, but then eventually they would get used to it too. But
didn't and from they all also reports,
he
like,
enjoyed it. I mean, not like, you know, he was there, he'd enjoyed it. And
yeah.
You know, you said they would be drunk at first and then maybe they would get used to it, you know, but I don't think I could ever get used to it. That would be something that.
Yeah, I don't know. That it's
well,
it's
just
a
like
horrible,
the prisoners, they would say, you know, they would get used to being on death duty,
well,
you know, like dead body duty.
And I'm not
and
making
stuff,
any excuses for any of this because you can't. There's no excusing any of it. I know, you know, Germany was in such a bad place after World War One that the people of Germany were like looking for anything to have pride in their country again. And Hitler was really good at getting the people psyched up and, you know, just kind of this, it just turned into national pride and then turned into the hate for the Jews and just kind of just ballooned into this giant thing. And, you know, if you start giving people power over other people in that way, what's the word? You get like the term drunk with power.
Yeah.
Eventually being all powerful over somebody and having their life in your hands, a lot of people, I think, really start to like it, wrong, right or wrong.
Yeah.
You know, because there's one, it's a scientific study. I can't remember the whole name of it. It's a real famous one where they had these students and they like made some of them prisoners and some of them guards. And the ones that were guards were just got more and more abusive and power hungry over the ones that were considered prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like terrible. And then sometimes they'd pull some, they'd swap them.
Yeah.
And then the ones that were prisoners didn't have any compassion once they became guards and they were just as hard on it. So it's like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Now, Mengele had certain things he would look for while he was making his selections on the ramp. He would look for people with unique traits like twins, especially twins. Twins was a big one. Dwarfs, giants, and another big one was heterochromia, which is when somebody has two eyes, one eye is
blue
different
eye,
color.
Green eye. Yeah,
yeah,
they have
like
two different
eyes.
Color
don't
eyes.
Match. Yeah. Mengele even would be on the selection ramp when it wasn't his time to do it. At least this is some accounts. I got to say, Mengele got such a big rep, I guess, or like he became the face to a lot of these people that some survivors would report him being the one that selected them or not, or was there when they got off. And then they describe what he looked like and it's not the same person.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of the accounts you don't know for sure. I mean, a lot of them though are backed up, you know, so I saw something where it said like he would even come and do the selections when it wasn't his time.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's the case.
Well, that sounds like something he would.
But there's also accounts where he'd be doing the selections and it'd be taking a long time and he'd get like fed up with doing it and he would just say, okay, everybody to the right. And then he would just, whoever was left didn't even go through them anymore and just kill them all.
Wow.
So that's where I get the whole serial killer thing. I mean,
well, I know.
I know, really, he was doing it for his country, I guess, and for science and stuff. So it's not like your typical serial killer.
Yeah.
But the show is not just serial killers. It's malice. And, you know, I mean, so I don't
know. Well, no, I was just.
Yeah, I mean,
I agree.
He's not considered
a
serial
killer.
He deserves
a spot on this.
By the term, like you were saying, you know, is he a serial killer? I guess he's not considered a serial killer.
Well, let me say this.
He's a war criminal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but let me say this.
Yes.
A lot of our cases that we've talked about on here, there's a common theme where they do like animal cruelty and stuff, you know, pull a leg off something, see how it jumped, you know, like remember, what's his face, did the pull the bullfrog leg off, see how it jumped differently, you know, and doing things like that. He has humans
to experiment.
That he can do the exact same thing, and he can do whatever he wants because he has.
It's all in the name of power. Science.
Yeah, it's all in the name of quote unquote science. For so, yeah, I consider him the same MO, but he went past animals and went on to people.
Yeah,
which is
now horrible. You know, I said thousands and thousands. Well, this is just right here. So around 3,000 twins were selected. Most were children, not all of them. He did do stuff with adult twins also and experiment on them. And about only a couple hundred of the 3,000 survived. So that's just that's twins. That's not including people he just put to death.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And most of the time, the children were separated from their families. But on rare occasions, especially if they were very young, Mengele would allow their mother to join the children. But most of the time at the concentration camps, mothers and children were separated.
Yeah.
Husbands were separated from wives and children. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, the women and children were just automatically killed.
Yeah.
Not always, but mostly. The twins were sometimes referred to as Mengele's children. Even though they were experimented on, oftentimes they were treated better than the other prisoners. And many of the children weren't initially afraid of Mengele because he would often have pockets full of candy and chocolates. And
I wouldn't want to take a piece of candy from that man.
Well, imagine a little kid and you just see like a doctor figure that's being all nice in this whole world of scariness.
And I'm sure he was smiling and being
well, all he'd even sweet. Play with him. He talked to him, play with him. And some of the kids even called him Uncle Mengele. Yeah. Well, this is before, you know.
Yeah.
So the twins probably had the best conditions of anyone in the camp until they were taken to have the experiments done on them.
More with Tina, Steve, and Christine on Malice After Midnight coming up.
This week's episode is sponsored by J&W Soaps. From building the recipe for each batch to constructing the design for each bar, their handmade soaps are sure to please. Check them out at jnwsoaps.com and use the code MALICE15 to get 15% off your online order of two or more items.
And now more of Malice After Midnight with your hosts, Tina, Steve, and Christine.
Now, this part here is going to get to where it's got some stuff that's going to be a little hard to hear. So just kind of like, you know, warning, you know.
So. Just want to take this time to notice your paper and how big the font is on your paper. Is that because you can't see?
I just want to say, too, that when I printed, when he pulled out the printer, he was like, good job on that big print.
Yeah, I didn't ask for it.
It's bold and it's big. It's like 23 font.
In the last couple months, I'm getting to my vision. Hit 41 and the vision's starting to go.
Mine hit it like 30. So.
Yeah. So
good for you.
Now, unless Tina wanted to hold the paper up for me the whole time, then it would be, I could read it. But when I get it close, it's got to be big, which is weird. It makes no sense. But. So, like I said, we're getting into some of his experiments now. And honestly, I could have episodes and episodes, hours, not episodes, but like hours of all the detail and the people's accounts of what happened from the survivors and stuff. So we're going to get into it somewhat. I can't get totally into it, but so often once the twin, this is when he's not Uncle Mengele anymore after this starts.
I bet.
So rough.
So often the twins were made to strip naked and lay next to each other where they'd be examined and detailed measurements would be taken over every inch of their body. Like everything. They would just examine them in every way. This would even sometimes take hours. This is crazy. He would do large blood transfusions. Like he would like, just like take
drain a body
to,
and
to,
take,
from one twin to the other. Just like swap their blood.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, just to see how they did all kinds of crazy stuff on twins. He would give injections into the spine and spinal taps with no anesthesia. He would give them diseases like typhus and tuberculosis to one twin and not the other. And then when the sick twin would die, they would just automatically kill the other one. And then they would do like comparison autopsies to see how it affected the body. And with twins, you know, I guess that was a better thing to say, well, this is what they were like if they died. And this would probably be if they didn't have that, you know, because so much stuff genetically is the same on twins, you know. So I had like a, what do they call that when they do like a study? You got your base and your standard and your, I don't remember what it's called, but you know, they got the one to go by and then what happens. So it's crazy. And they would give like an injection, like they'd be laying there on the table and just give an injection of fentanyl or something like that straight into their heart and it would kill them.
Boy, yeah.
They would maybe suffer for just like a couple seconds and then die.
Wow.
Surgeries would be performed without anesthesia, such as castrations, organ removal, and amputations. Now, this wasn't just on twins. This would also be on other patients. And he's not the only doctor that did this. There was doctors in all the concentration camps that did this kind of stuff. He's just the most famous and probably the worst, the most prolific.
I just don't understand how he, I mean, even if it's in the name of science, like how can you look at a child and I know sometimes it's not always kids, but still, I mean, or even an adult and they're crying. I mean,
because they hated
and
Jews.
And they can say, stop well, and they, whatever.
Yes, they thought of the Jews as less than. Jews and gypsies and so other, much. It was mostly Jews and gypsies were the ones that they really would get out, you know. They would also do stuff like they would wound prisoners, just learn how to do better care for their soldiers in the field. They did experiments on how to fight gangrene, you know, in the field. So they learned... It's horrible to even say this, and I don't mean this but like in a good way, but they got a lot of valuable information from these experiments on how to treat their people. Right. Now, it's wrong and it's bad, and that's not how you go about it. Mm-hmm. But for them, this is like animal experiment. That's what I'm thinking. This is like experimenting on animals to them. The Jews were like animals to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because I hated them so much. I didn't think of them as human,
they
I
hated
guess.
Them so much. And they just think, well, that's like the same as like doing this on like rats or something. You know?
Yeah.
That's not my words, but I'm just
Yeah,
you
know. I know.
Oh, he also... And another thing, too, a lot of the thing with the twins was the big thing with the Germans was they were wanting to do the Nazis. They were wanting to make the master race. OK, so they had traits that they thought were dominant in Germans, like the blonde hair, the blue eyes, strong, certain jaw lines, just everything. And the interest with twins was they were thinking they figure out why are these two people identical? How can we make people have identical traits and make the master race?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we have German women have twins every time they have children?
Oh.
That kind of thing, which is crazy.
They want to build it that fat, like have twins.
Oh yeah,
get it faster or something.
To have to grow the population, the German population even quicker, or the master race population, which is funny. Mengele doesn't fit the description of the master race. Hitler didn't fit the description of the master race.
Yeah, they both,
he was brown hair, brown eyes, dark. Hitler had all kinds of genetic problems. He was very sickly.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he was.
Yeah. Mentally, and but
you know, going back to the twins and the total, I was still stuck in my head with the blood transfusions. The only way that would maybe work and not kill them would is if they had the same blood type.
Well, do twins have the same blood type? I imagine
not necessarily.
Identical twins probably do.
Maybe.
They did identical twins and fraternal twins. So
because if you don't have, you can't receive everybody's blood unless you're certain types, and you can't give, you know,
twins have
and
the same,
all of
identical
that.
Identical twins, I'm pretty sure, have the same blood type.
Maybe, I don't know, but I know fraternal ones don't.
Because I know their DNA.
Necessarily.
I know, like, their DNA is, like...
My sister's twins, I'm pretty sure they have different blood types.
But yeah.
They're fraternal.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, not
I'm sure
necessarily. I'm sure he doesn't just keep identical... Didn't keep identical
No, they
twins.
Had fraternal twins also, but I know that with identical twins, they would look at them and everything...
Because didn't you say...
Because your body will fight off...
Yeah, but
and
I'm pretty sure.
And you said they have boy and girl twins, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look it up. Do identical twins have the same blood type?
Okay, I just looked it up. It says identical twins will have the same blood type with a few very rare exceptions.
Okay.
And it says, now, fraternal twins may have the same blood type or they may have different.
Just like siblings.
Well, just like siblings, yeah. Well, you know, my kids, okay, the boys, I think they got the same blood type and all their siblings all have the same blood type.
That's weird.
I know. I was like, wow, wait a minute. You all have the same?
Wait a minute.
That's some strong genes there.
But it's not mine, and it's not their dad's.
Oh, that's weird.
So I'm not really 100% sure how that happened. But
now, this one kind of gets me. I mean, the experiments is not even the most horrible, but it's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
They also were really obsessed with eye color for some reason, people's eye color. And they even collected people's eyes and sent them off to other medical institutes in Germany, you know, just for experimentation and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would take, like, if somebody was sick with, there's one disease called, like, NOMA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, basically, like, from being in, like, malnourished and dirty conditions and stuff. And a lot of the gypsies would have this. They would cut off people's heads and, like, send them off. To be studied. So like one of the accounts was this person was really disturbed because they like had a box or like a jar with a chemical in it in like a 12-year-old's head. And it's just crazy. But anyway, they would try to change a person's eye color by injecting dye or chemicals into their eyes while they were just awake. No pain medicine, just a needle with an injection. Yeah. This would, and a lot of times this would cause like, of course it would cause pain and infection and sometimes temporary or permanent blindness.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Trying to change somebody's like brown eyes to blue or, you know.
Yeah. What the hell kind of, would they use food coloring? I mean,
I don't know. Ink. What? It said ink. It said ink and chemicals.
Nice.
So
bleach.
I read a book about Mengele and we'll put it in our resources and they talked about that.
Would they just go off on like a tangent and be like, this is what we're doing this week? I mean, What was it, though? Did they just have like a, did he just have a list that he wanted to do?
I don't know. They just.
He probably woke up one day and was like, hmm.
I don't know.
Let's see if we can change our eye color. There were certain
doctors, and I didn't name all the doctors. Like, there would be a specialist in Germany somewhere that was like specifically, you know, his thing was eyes and eye coloring. And they would send all the eyes to them to be studied. Or and one person might have something with a certain organ thing or a certain disease, and they would send stuff to them. Like, they were sending body parts out, like, a lot in boxes with, like, yeah, like, organs and stuff were just sent out, you know, all the time. Like, if some like somebody had a club foot, they might actually, like, send off their club foot. Just crazy stuff. All in the name of science and all that. This is another thing. Mengele was known as, like, a disease fighter. Tina knows a little bit about this. Like, so if, like, there was, like, a disease like typhus or scarlet fever or measles, right, he would just, like, send, what was it, like, all 15?
Yeah, he would just, like, you know, instead of, like, trying to do something.
Instead of, like,
just,
isolation.
Yeah, instead of isolating and trying to, he would just,
we know,
like,
a little bit about that now with COVID.
Yeah. He would just take, like, the 1,500 sickest people that had that certain, like, you know, just say it was a scarlet fever. The top 1,500 people that were the sickest, he would just take them and kill them.
Automatically.
And then he, like, took, like, the bedding, which was straw. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like animal. Like, they take, like, the straw bedding and, like, change it out and put fresh in there.
And then they would move the other people to this.
Yeah. Like, they would chamber, just.
This, like,
it was crazy. I'm telling
a
you.
Barracks or whatever building. And they would just go through the buildings and killing off everybody that was really sick.
Oh, my
and,
God.
Yeah.
It's like. When you have animals,
so it's hardly
they get
a disease
sick,
fighter,
you know.
Yeah,
and the, you know they die, and then you just like change the bedding and change.
He's like
the,
he's like Carol in The Walking Dead.
I'm laughing
Dead.
Because it's like this is getting on my nerves. Yeah.
Remember in The Walking Dead, like, when those people were sick and Carol just like killed them and burned them?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Well, you know, like back then, did they do? Well, I guess they did do quarantine stuff because they quarantined for all the. Plagues
well,
and
well
stuff.
Yeah, we did in America, and they did normally in countries, but these people don't matter, so they just, well, we'll just kill 50.
Well, yeah,
people.
Well, that's why I was saying, I was like, but wait a minute, they were quarantined and, for plague and all that.
Another group I should mention that Mengele and other people would save from death on the ramp were physicians. So like Jewish physicians and doctors and pharmacists, so they could help aid in the experiments. So a lot of Jews had to help with this horrible work. Like a lot of times they did autopsies for Mengele. They kept like notes. There was like one artist one time, like he made her draw a lot of this, a lot of his work, like for certain like facial features and stuff. And she was thinking, you know, I know that my stuff's going to probably end up in a doctor book. It didn't happen, but like in a medical book and stuff. And it's just crazy because, like, you know, these unnamed Jewish doctors, and I don't know if probably would have mostly been Jews because I don't know if there's a lot of the gypsy doctors and stuff. But anyway, anybody that could help.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, but they would, you know. When somebody go to the gas chamber, they after they died, they'd pull out their teeth, you know, like the gold in their teeth, and they would save hair, and they used hair to make, didn't they use like the hair to make clothing and stuff? Yes. I mean, it's just unbelievable the stuff that they did.
Yeah.
And we've all seen photos and pictures of like towards the end of the war when there was just dead bodies everywhere and stuff. This, you know, a lot of this is more at the beginning when it was a little more efficient. And they were trying to keep people calm, and they, you know, a lot of people didn't know they were walking into their death at first, you know, and the people that were there a while knew. You know, and he would come into a room and right away people would be scared. Are we dying? You know, I mean, a lot of times you come to the room like, all right, you three of this. And they would kill people. I mean, you know, because once you're there, if you weren't serving a purpose and being helpful or didn't find any use for you, they would just kill you just to make
room.
Well,
yeah, when they would bring, I know that, you know, watching stuff and doing, you know, seeing stuff over the years, I know that like when they would bring new people in, the people that were already there would be the ones that get the luggage and pile it up, you know, like that.
Yeah.
They would be, you know, they knew the routine.
Yeah. A person I should mention is Dr. Miklos Nisli, Nisli, and he was a prisoner physician who assisted Mengele, and he actually published a book on his experiences with Mengele called A Doctor's Eyewitness Account, and so that's how we know a lot about what happened also. I think he released that, I think he wrote that book. I don't know exactly when it was wrote, but I know it was actually put into English in like 1960.
You know, he probably had to sit, bring, you know,
drink a lot.
Yeah,
while
I was
going to
say, drink and get prepared to write it because
I don't even know.
You know,
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
You know, PST. What? Wait,
PTSD.
PTSD. Thanks. That would definitely be going on in that case.
Yeah, that's now. I'm going to get to his evading capture, Mengele. This is what's crazy. A lot like Adolf Eichmann was captured. Adolf Hitler killed himself, supposedly.
Coward. Supposedly.
That's another conspiracy theory we can talk about someday. I don't think he did because, like, a lot of the Germans escaped to, like, Brazil and South America. Go ahead.
I have my hand up, sir. I just want to say.
I'd like to call on Tina, yes.
Remember when we watched that thing? And I was like, I'm not kidding. I'm like,
you were skeptical at first.
I was skeptical at first, but I'm just going to say that I'm genuinely shocked and surprised that, like, a lot of South America, what was it, like Brazil and
there was other Brazil countries and some other places. Argentina.
High population of residents that speak German. Like, it's
there
crazy.
Was Jewish, German communities,
yes, I was
schools.
Like in shock.
They found places out in the woods that were like, you know, top of the line, like our electricity, water, you know, water, like bases, all kinds of stuff. I mean, they definitely had a plan of escape. And there's a lot of these countries that saw, like, they would see like German U-boats and stuff, or like German submarines, like come to the shore and drop off people. So
yeah.
I honestly, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I think there's no proof that was even Hitler's body.
Yeah.
In fact, most people don't think it was. And in fact, America, we had a whole thing looking for him for quite a few years after the war.
Yeah.
You can't get Hitler. Don't get Hitler type. And, you know, also the fact that a lot of those people had other people that looked like them to keep.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Body doubles.
What? Yeah, body doubles. Why can I not think of like words?
Doppelganger? That's what I was thinking.
Well, yeah, but body double. But that's, we've gotten off on a tangent. So anyway. In January 1945, the Soviet army made their way into western Poland, and Mengele fled Auschwitz. He was able to avoid capture from Soviet forces. And this is really crazy. So he actually was in U.S. custody for a while under the name Mengele. And we had no idea who he was. I mean, this is right after. Nobody knew, you know. So the Americans, they just thought he was a regular German soldier. And, you know, like the regular soldiers and stuff, we would let go. I mean, they were just people fight, you know, they would let him go back home. In fact, some of the German soldiers ended up aiding us in some of the kind of the whole transfer of power and all that kind of stuff. You know, they, you know, there was just regular, a lot of them were just regular people.
Yeah. So there wasn't like a whole Inglorious Bastards reality to any of
there that. Actually was some of that.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was wondering how true that movie was.
Well, that's based, some of that is based on some real stuff. And I don't know during the war, but I know like the Jewish, they had like people that were out, like they actually did have Nazi hunters throughout like the 60s, 70s, and 80s, getting these war criminals, and we'll kind of get there. Thing is, this is interesting, okay? When you were an SS soldier, there was some kind of thing, I don't know if it was something was tattooed on you.
Oh, really?
Whether it was your blood type, it was some information that was tattooed on all SS soldiers, and he didn't have that tattoo on him, and that was one of the reasons he was able to not be found out as SS.
Because
if they would have saw that right away, they weren't letting SS at all go.
Yeah.
If you were SS and you were under capture, you were going to be tried in some way or go through questioning or something. So they just thought he was a regular soldier and let him go. They didn't know the name Mengele.
Oh, I wish he would have had
no name. Yeah, so that could have ended, you could have got caught. So for a few years, he worked in Bavaria as a farmhand under a fake name, but eventually his wealthy family, they always denied helping him, but it came out later that they did. So they would pay people, and he had all kinds of people helping him. And so they actually paid to send him to immigrate to South America. And eventually he settled in Argentina. And he spent quite a few years in Argentina. Now, he was comfortable, but not wealthy by any means when he was living. I mean, you know, he stayed under the radar, did a lot of farmhand work and stuff like that. There was a couple times where it ended up something would happen and his medical background would kind of come out. And then he would have to do something. Then he'd have to leave because he didn't want to, you know, be found or anything. And now, eventually, German war criminals were starting to get captured and tried and put to death. And after Adolf Eichmann, which was one of the big, like the top three big ones, was captured in Buenos Aires in 1960, that really put fear into Mengele. Like, he started to, like, basically, his whole life on the run, he lived in fear. He was always scared. Now, that's still, I'd rather he got captured and tried. But so he eventually moved, ended up in Brazil. And that's kind of, there's like a famous movie, like The Boys from Brazil, and you know, with Mengele and all that. So that's where he spent the rest of his life, in Sao Paulo, Brazil. On February 7th, 1979, he suffered a stroke and drowned while swimming in Bertoja, Brazil. And
how unfortunate.
Yeah, right.
I wish you would have got stoned.
Yeah, I was in the book I read, they talked about that, and the people saw him out there, and I do think he struggled for a little bit before he drowned, so at least he suffered a little bit that way.
Good, I hope he hurt.
Yeah, and he was buried under the name Wolfgang Gerhard. So that's the name he'd stayed under at the end there. Years later, like in like 85 or something like that, after the German police, you know, and after all this happened, Germany definitely played a part in trying to capture these war criminals. I mean, they were trying to fix their nation's problems, and, you know, they were definitely trying to do right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay, I'm sure there was some supporters still, you know. You got to wait for all this. Just like with races and stuff, you just got to wait for them to die, basically.
Yeah.
You know, people ain't going to change their ways. You got to work on the next generations to try to fix problems. You got the older stuff, a lot of times people won't change their ways.
Right.
German police had gotten evidence from the Mengele from a Mengele family friend, and they were able to locate where Wolfgang Gerhard, quote unquote, Joseph Mengele, was buried. They did exhume his corpse, and in 1992, DNA evidence proved that it was Joseph Mengele. And that's kind of where the story ends. They finally got him. But he was one of the ones they were looking for a long time, and there was always, a lot of times they were real close to getting him, but never got him.
Yeah.
So he's the one that got away for sure. So
he did so much damage.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's crazy. I mean, he was able to evade capture for, you know, for 30 years.
Well, this one was hard because, you know, I
well, yeah, it's, you know, that stuff's
tough to hear.
Yeah, and it's real interesting, though, and people need to hear this kind of stuff. And you know, we're trying to do stuff not just on true crime. I mean, this is a crime. This is horrible. Yeah, but so we wanted to get on, you know, some more stuff about this.
Well, you've been wanting to do this one, so, you know.
Yeah, I've been teasing it for a while, so hopefully everybody liked it.
I'm just good.
I'm just glad we got to get one. 1 week right after the last episode. That's like a big trip. Yeah, right. Back again.
But yeah, no, it's tough. You know, as people too, you know, we are not that way. But, you know, me being a teacher too, you know, I just, all that stuff makes me sad. So this was a tough one. Kids.
Yeah, it was a tough one. And I don't know. I just felt like it's something, like I noticed I to people that I just know, I was like, say, I'm going to do an episode about Joseph Mengele. And people are like, who?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, really?
People don't know.
You guys don't know who that is? A lot of people don't.
You're a history buff.
Yeah, I love history.
A lot of people are.
I get that from Dad. And I don't know, honestly, if I learned about him in school either.
I didn't.
I might have just learned about him from
We learned about the camps.
Yeah, and we learned about
but we didn't learn
Hitler and stuff.
Yeah,
but
we didn't learn about him.
And I honestly
don't
know what they teach now. I know history books are a lot different looking than when we were in school.
Oh, yeah.
And ours were a lot different looking from when our parents were in school.
Well, I teach fourth grade social studies, too. And right now it's Alabama history, so we're not going too far.
I remember that whole Alabama history stuff.
Yeah.
My kids are like, when are we going to learn about other places? I'm like, another year, because it's not going to be this year. And they're like,
fourth grade is just Alabama history.
Just Alabama history. Yeah. Because they'll be like, when are we going to learn about Titanic? I'm like,
I don't know if you learn about Titanic in school. I mean, everybody, it's funny, everybody gets like excited about the Titanic, but and we all learn about it, but where do we learn about it?
We learned about it in school.
Did we? I don't remember. I remember looking
at it. But it's not fourth grade in Alabama.
Of course not.
No, it's not.
I was little in the
80s. I think it was more junior high or high school, I remember discussing it.
Little in the 80s. Like, I was born in 80, but I remember, like, in the mid-80s, late-80s, and in the 90s is when everybody was obsessed with the Titanic.
Oh,
because that's
Titanic.
When they first started really finding it, you know, the first time they found it in the water and all that.
I love that.
But Titanic's a little ways.
She brought it home, man.
I love it. I want to ride the new Titanic ship.
I don't even know if that's real. I keep seeing posts about that. There's no real Titanic.
There's supposed to be a remake or something like that.
No, that's
Christine, taking the same.
Christine.
Taking the same.
That's all.
I think
that it took.
I don't know, Christine. I would skip that tour.
I might want to ride it on
the
second trip.
No.
I don't think there's. I think that's just something I keep seeing on the internet.
You're like, Jimmy, don't turn. Remember, you're supposed to hit it head on this time, Jimmy.
No, I just keep seeing it on the internet. I don't think they really are building one.
I don't know.
It was supposed
to.
That
where you can stick your hand in the cold water.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a long way around from Joseph Mengele.
The aquarium.
So. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks, y'all.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.